From UCB Comedy Studios and live on Facebook, you're watching the UCB Digital Podcast or listening to it. I don't want to judge whichever way you want to consume this. You're consuming the UCB Digital Podcast, and we are here today with our second ever meeting of our Maker Book Club. If you have not listened to this podcast before, this is a podcast for makers. It's for people who are out there making shit, making comedy videos, making comedy films. And what we were noticing was there wasn't a book club for people who wanted to keep making themselves better makers in this space. So we said, let's fill that market need. And that's how the Maker Book Club was born. So a few months back, we had put out the word, read this book all together. We'll meet at a certain time. That time is now. We're excited to be here today, broadcasting on Facebook, so you can join the book club as well. If you read the book, we'd love to see your comments and thoughts on this show as well. And if you're a podcast listener out there, you've already missed it because this will come out on the podcast next week. Hopefully it reflects back if you have read this book to the lessons that you have learned in our book. So, welcome. In studio today, along with me, Tessa Greenberg, Sam Clemmer, and Matt Starr. Hey, guys. Welcome to the book club.
Thanks, Nate.
Hey, Nate.
How's it going?
Thanks for having us.
Oh, yeah. Good.
One at a time, yeah.
Glad to be amongst makers.
Yeah, amongst makers and friends. No. And we're also enjoying that nice Bronx beer. I'm going to crack mine finally.
Are we sponsored by them, or are we just giving them a...
No, the Bronx beer is the official house beer of the UCB Comedy Podcast Network.
Oh, right. Wow.
What are you guys drinking? Down there, you got the rye going?
I'm drinking the rye right now, and it is... very rye.
Alex recommended the rye to me, and he did. It's not disappointed.
Yeah. You know, I poured the beer out and just put some warm milk in my can. I'm not drinking right now.
Just kidding. Is that true?
No. It's the Belgian style pale ale.
Yeah.
It's very good.
And of course, I'm enjoying the Slow Your Roll Session IPA, which has the coolest can. I like this one for the can, personally.
It's like a funky 1990s style Subway bebopping and rocksteady.
Right. It's good radio.
Yeah.
It's very good radio. And of course, the book that we have all read, top to bottom, The Director's Six Senses by Simone Bartoszagi, who is an author that I'd never heard of before this book, that's for sure.
Nope.
Yeah.
Now, I'll tell you guys this story about how we came to this book. You know, we had just finished a 550-page book the last time, a really dense but comprehensive guide to independent filmmaking. And we said, all right, rule number one for round two is it's got to be a fast read. Rule number two is that we want to be able to, like, find a book. What I said was I want to find a book that's somewhat recent because I feel like a lot of the classic filmmaking books, like, yeah, sure, we could have read, like, you know, on directing or making movies or some sort of like classic book. But I do feel like in a digital making sense, some of the lessons in there, maybe not so applicable. So let's find something recent. And then also wanted to do something for directors so we could sort of talk about the directing craft more specifically as well. And this book came up with a really nice, it was high up in the SEO. It came up quickly. It seemed to have like some decent reviews, albeit like light reviews.
Yeah, that's the number one sign of good literature to me is great SEO.
Did this book have little ad next to it when you Googled it?
It came right up at the top of the Google list.
Yeah, and the reviews seemed like relatively positive. And then the thing that I discovered too in doing a little research was that this book publisher, which if I can see it here, I believe it's Michael Weiss Productions. Yeah, Michael Weiss Productions is a filmmaking publisher.
Mm.
So all that they publish are books that are very niched in different aspects of the filmmaking craft. So a lot of writing books, some directing books, some really, really specific shit. And I noticed that he was plugging a lot of the other Michael Weiss catalog in this book. So like some of those random books that he's recommending in here were all books from that same publisher.
He also says that if you visit MWP.com, you can get 25% off discount on those books.
Yeah. Yeah. And so like those things all adding up said to me, okay, let's try this out. I've never heard of this author, never heard of this book. But like the idea of there being a niche publisher for filmmakers, let's see what, if this is a sample that, again, has good SEO, is on subject matter. And also one of the reviews said like, really easy read,
I think
you checked all the boxes.
You're right. Building yourself up to having us. You're trying to build a defense for why you picked the book before we really get into it.
Yeah, I think that is true. That is true because, like, let me say this up top. This was not the most enjoyable book for me to read.
Right.
So Let me turn this to you guys, and if anybody out there has any comments, we're happy to have your thoughts if you read the book as well. But as a book for you guys, The Director's Six Senses, how did you enjoy the experience of this book?
I'll go first here. First off, if we're judging this book by its cover, great cover. Very good cover,
which I feel like you're supposed to do.
It's a very nice design.
Very fidget appealing. Spinner.
Very chic. Fidget spinner.
As very fidget spinnery, yes. As far it seems like an Apple computer was loading.
Yeah.
As far as like what I was expecting from the book and what I think it's offering, I think is the distinction of, is this a book for people who want to be directors or people who are directors? And I think if you're looking to read this book, it's for people who want to be directors, who aren't necessarily directing right now and are like, sure. Oh, here's this thing that I would love to give a shot at. I want to try directing. And I think it's an okay book for that.
It's like directing 101.
Yeah.
It's like if you went to college, which this guy is also a professor. I don't know if it says where he's a professor,
but
he says
Santa Monica College. Cool. And a professor.
It reads like, if you're going to a big lecture course on directing.
And I don't think that that's necessarily a bad thing on its face. I think that, and maybe some of it for me is exactly what you said, Matt, that like, I feel like there were some aspects of this that were just like not a tool. Like I guess I felt like from the title and from the concept, which is like this using all of your senses plus this like sixth sense, which is like, even right there, you're sort of like, yeah, okay, that's a publisher technique to like have the book have a hook. But like, I was thinking, okay, maybe this has some at least intermediate level value. And it definitely felt very fundamental. How about you, Tess, as somebody who is like working as a director, how did the experience this book strike you?
Yeah. You know, it's so funny because on the back of the book, it says, what you hold in your hands may be the most powerful book you'll ever read on filmmaking.
Yeah.
That's an overstatement.
That's a bold back of book. Yeah.
You know, I've been directing for around 8 years. And for me, it also read like a kind of freshman 101 film school book. Not to say that you can't take something from those things, even though that's how I read it in terms of my level of enjoyment. That's what it felt like. I was doing homework for my 101 film class.
Sure.
So there were just like very general kind of lessons to remind you of things. There were no revelations, at large. It was just kind of like looking back on your college film journal in a way.
And there were actual assignments that he was sort of like throwing out in this, and also like directing you back to his website.
Which I did not like the assignments. That was for me reading the assignments. I was like, no. And that's like,
the next page. I did not do those 20 pictures.
Absolutely not. No, thank you.
Yeah. How about for like, so Sam, let's sort of also like fill this in. You're somebody who works in production.
Yes.
But somebody who had, you said before you have never directed anything.
That's right. I write lots of things. I've been producing a lot lately, acting things. So I'm always like, orbiting around a director. And in things that I've been writing and producing lately, I've not felt comfortable directing just because I'm like, I don't know the first thing about it and how to, go about doing that. And so for me, a lot of these things were, to me, it felt like a lot of, it was pointing things out that were not intuitive. Like I was, you guys back me up here. Hold on.
Well, it talks about
Simone,
the sixth senses.
Simone put my brain into a pretzel.
What's funny is I feel like the book is literally called The Director's Six Senses. You'll have to guess what the sixth one is, guys. We'll get there.
Oh, we'll get there.
But in terms of like what you're talking about in terms of you know, what's intuitive in filmmaking and what's not, I think the part that's like really funny to me is he just gives like a Webster's dictionary or Wikipedia.
He literally says it's a Wikipedia dictionary.
Wikipedia dictionary definition of the six senses to start each chapter. And I don't know if we're ready to jump into each chapter yet, but you know, going back to what you're saying about being intuitive, it's like if you have to label that by first giving a Wikipedia definition, it's a little bit of an
it's like,
it does not inspire confidence as a reader. Yeah.
I think, you know, I think it's
courage. The definition of courage.
as Wikipedia says, not the dictionary. It is, I guess, like to just go back to like that initial, like, my initial defensiveness, if you want to frame it that way. But it's like, I guess like what I learned from this book is that like, yes, okay, this is a niche publisher who is doing a lot of, you know, trying to publish a lot of books about a lot of topics in the filmmaking realm specifically. But you are going to have a book like, but part of that is that it, you're speaking to a really fundamental audience because that's your broadest audience, right? Mm-hmm. There really probably isn't going to be that many books for a director who's worked for 10 years because you're working in it and you probably aren't going to be able to distill that down to a book. I think the only example of something that feels like it, a book that is like that, that I've read is that Thomas Lennon, and Ben Garrett book.
How to Write Movies for Fun and Profit.
A lot of really experienced writers also enjoyed that book because like it had a take, but it also had some really practical information in it. I think that's what I was hoping for, was that.
That was a great book.
It was a great book. Yeah. And from this description on the back and from the caveat, I was hoping for that. I was hoping that this book would be a high-level discussion of like how a director can sort of like elevate something practically, and I got none of that from this book.
My takeaway from this book was I could write a book on directing. Like, I have no desire to, nor any like credit to, but like I was like, I could have written this thing. Like Wikipedia first definitions.
Also, you break it, and if you, it's also like this is that's the way he broke it down was like the way that anybody could probably break down directing. You know, like, how does a movie work?
The first thing that, like, if you just open the front page and it's reviews, and the first sentence of the first review says, this book provides the aspiring director with a clear and concise approach to shooting his first feature. So I was like, well, I guess I gotta stop reading because it's only for the people who are directing his first feature.
Right. Yeah, Tessa, that's none of you.
I guess I can't read.
Yeah, you're a female director who wants to do episodic stuff.
So I can't be a director. Thanks.
Yeah. No, for sure. We were also supposed to be joined by our friend Sean Weiner, who read the book, but then at the last second had some professional engagements that got in the way of him being here. But he sent us some incredibly hot takes. Sean's somebody who teaches film, and I also thought that was an interesting perspective. He was nice enough to write up a really dense, it's a full page of notes and thoughts and scorching hot takes on this. And I thought that one of the interesting ones that he sent over here was that one of his issues with this book as a book is that it furthers this idea that what the director does is something magical. It has to be something like visionary that like you don't fully understand, right? And what that really discounts, especially in an independent filmmaking space and in a low budget filmmaking space, is the collaborative aspect of what making a film is and what making a video project is. And it definitely like, it doesn't go into any detail about it, but in what he's sort of like describing there, he's attributing all of these choices in the book to some sort of director who has this like superhuman, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like ability, this sixth sense, where it's like more than just that person worked on these projects. He does a whole case study. We'll get to it. But like he does that case study. The director didn't make all of those choices. The actors did. It was on the page. You know what I mean? The cinematography in that film was great. Like all of these things like added up to that scene in a way that like this book definitely like puts the director on that pedestal in that way.
Right.
Right?
Yeah. Oh yeah. He even credits the script supervisor as a creative collaborator on the film. So all you scripties out there, shout out, holler. We see you. You're seen.
We appreciate you.
That's right. Yeah. So digging into the actual like content of the book, He starts the book by, has a little bit of an introduction, and then goes into the six senses in sequence, starting with, which is the first sense that he goes to? Sight.
Sight.
Here's my take. I thought it started stronger than it finished, for sure. I thought that some of this sight section was, and Sophie and I talked about this on an earlier podcast, like, I liked that Pinterest advice that he had, the idea of collecting images. I'm like, oh yeah, that's a really fundamental thing, but it's something that's a nice reminder that's like, what about the visual moves you in mm-hmm. this medium, and how do I sort of like keep a stable of that? Maybe some of that for me is because I feel like I'm constantly like mood boarding things, or like prepping pitch decks that like have to have visuals that reflect, you know what I mean? Something right. that isn't shot yet. But I felt like the sight section was probably the most insightful section of the book. I don't know. How'd you guys feel?
Yeah, it's interesting because, well, you know, all of us here happen to be comedic filmmakers, and sight is very important. Visuals are very, very important. Especially if you're doing physical comedy. But a lot of the times a comedic film or episode is based on the writing. Like, he uses a Hitchcock quote to say, like, it should rely more on the visual. But that's really not often the case with comedy. Like, you talk about punchlines, you talk about writing jokes. It's a lot more dependent. Comedy filmmaking is more dependent on the audio than the visual in certain cases, unless you're doing something kind of slapsticky, or you look at something like really going far back to Charlie Chaplin that was purely physical. Mm-hmm. It depends what kind of comedy you're doing.
Sure.
But I do often find that comedies don't think enough about the visual, because they're so reliant on, like, oh, we got a good script and we got amazing actors that are super funny. Like, I was talking about this with The Good Place the other day. It's mm-hmm. like one of my favorite new series on television. I fucking love it. Can I say fuck? I just said fuck three times. Whatever. Of course I can say
There's
fuck.
No censors either on
I know.
Facebook
That's
or
why
on
I'm
a podcast.
Saying as many
you can
times
say fuck as
can.
Many times as you want.
So
it's all good.
Funny that I even give a shit.
Yeah.
So fucking what the fuck was I talking about? The Good Place. The Good Place is, I think, such a fucking good show. And the blocking is non-existent. It's just people standing in a room and standing in place and talking to each other. But the production design is amazing. Like, it's just, like, they really, really thought about the way it was going to look like heaven, but a fake version of heaven. Like, so I don't know. I feel like that's a really interesting sort of example for me in thinking about visual versus, you know.
I think the best comedy videos do combine great visuals with great writing, though. Like, I would say, like, the Britannic guys, all of their videos have some kind of, like, really strong visual cue in it. And, like, they never release anything that doesn't have, that it's just, like, two people talking. Like, how many web sketches have you seen that are just, like, angle one, angle two, angle one, angle two, and it's, like, talking about whatever, and it's, like, I can't tell. I always think about Chuck Jones, the famous animator who invented Looney Tunes. He was the voice of Bugs Bunny, all that. He wasn't the voice. Sorry, Connor Ratliff, who's going to call me on that. he always said, like, good animation you should be able to watch with the sound off. And I do agree with that, and I try to think about that as somebody who's primarily a writer, of, like, how can we visually express this to also support the writing, too? I think it is important, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to ask that in terms of, like, the approach there on a more, like, a writer's side. Does this visual section of this book feel like it offers you anything?
Yeah, for sure. Like, I think the earlier in the process you can start thinking visually, and I think that's something that, like, chapter one does kind of mention, of, like, one frame, one image, what's the story here? The earlier you can start thinking visually, the better your project's going to be.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And there are some really fundamental things that he talks about in this section. I mean, it's a short section, but even when he's talking about like, depth of field and things like that, again, going back to, like, if this was a survey course at a first year level, those are applicable pieces of knowledge that I think that it's just a matter of, like, where you're coming at this book from.
Can I say, he does present it as though he is, like, revealing a magic trick, though. Like, it's an image, if you haven't read the book, it's an image where, like, everything's blurry except for one guy's face. And he's like, it's not that the man's face is more interesting than everybody else. Did you notice everything else is out of focus?
Yeah.
And it's
the,
like,
main character is in focus.
Dun, dun, dun. Yeah. It's like, ta-da. And it's like, oh, yeah.
Well, then what was funny about that was he's giving examples of images, like still images, and then he goes, and a movie is that 24 times per second. And I was like, wait, what?
I thought we were just talking about comic strips here. I'm done.
Yeah. So he ends his section with this assignment.
Nope. Flipped over.
Nobody did the assignment.
Which was that? Gather the images?
The assignment was gather some images. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, he's just saying be aware of your surroundings, yeah, of like what a character's, yeah, environment would look like, which is true. There is also a lot of comedy that doesn't pay attention to that and relies too much on the actors or on the writing,
yeah,
and doesn't look like anything, you know?
I always find myself writing a thing and then I'm finished and I'm like, wait, I have no idea what this looks like at all. I just have like what the people are saying in my head. I don't know where this lives and how people are moving or.
Oh, definitely.
Like
I mean,
that.
I think that's a, I think from a comedy writing perspective too, it's like, I remember in the very early days of like doing like beta teams here at UCB, we used to read sketches and you'd be like, how are we making this?
Mm-hmm. Or
like, this is hilarious.
Yeah.
But we're like 8, you know, 27-year-olds with like $50 to put together.
Yeah.
How are we making this?
Yeah.
I find a lot the opposite can happen where you're writing something and you're like, kind of what you were saying earlier with The Good Place, where everyone's just kind of standing still because nothing really is happening visually.
Yeah.
And so, if you're thinking more visually in a more kind of directorly way, you can really amp up, and it'll influence your writing.
Yeah,
not vice versa.
So
touch
is next, and he's sort of defining touch here as production design. That's his subheader. Again, Wikipedia is at the top of this thing. His definition
Wikipedia.
Is coming from Wikipedia at the top. I wonder, is that a thing? Do you have to like pay money to use the dictionary?
Also, isn't Wikipedia still set up so that
no.
anyone can go in and change the definition of something?
Yes, it is. That's
so,
the whole point.
The fook?
Yeah. So he's going through this and he gives some examples here. He starts to reference The Matrix. He's talking about Rear Window and he's talking about like Back to the Future. I mean, look, I will say the first scene in Back to the Future is amazing.
Oh, yeah. My God. It's amazing.
It's an amazing.
Yeah.
That's
my
actually
third favorite movie of all time.
Yeah. A good reference. Again, it feels like, but it's like, I also remember Rear Window. Like, I remember this discussion of Rear Window in a book from film school. Not this book, another book. So it's also like, that's not, again, new information. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not new territory to talk about how effective the beginning of Rear Window is. It's, again, to go back to like, I was hoping this would have really applicable skills in a digital age. And we're talking about a Hitchcock movie from half a century ago.
Right.
You know, we're talking about Back to the Future from
80s.
The 80s.
Yeah.
You know, like, where is this in terms of like what you and I can do together this weekend?
And also, it was like a huge blockbuster film.
Yeah.
Let's look at one of the most successful movies of all time.
I actually, this was the chapter that I thought was the most helpful.
Oh, really?
This is, touches the one, is the Wikipedia sense that I don't believe it's a sense. You know, it's on Wikipedia. I don't buy it. This is the one where I was like, this is what I think I do the most as a director, which is figure out how this thing on paper actually would behave in reality. Like, yeah, the pointing out of like, and yes, it's true that I'm sure a million other directing books have brought up Hitchcock's Rear Window, but like pointing out like, oh, in real life, this is the way this would look. Neo's desk would be messy, whereas the agent's desk would be clean. Or that like, it's hot out. Why does it have to be hot out? Because you have your windows open in the summertime and you don't in the winter. Like those kind of considerations and just in general figuring out like, I've taught directing work. I've like directed sketch a lot. And like most of the time when I see people's sketches or I come in for them, it's just people who haven't considered like, no, when you open a door, the door has weight. And when you're holding a camera, you don't shoot it like this. In real life, you like it has weight to it and all of that. And I said, I think touch as a director is, I think you should start with touch in this book rather than start with sight. Because I think like that's the first thing that you're trying to figure out is, this thing on paper has weight. How can we make that have weight on screen? Yeah.
Sorry to cut you off. Sorry. But this is the section where he talked about the soundstage and how he built like a whole porch, which it was like interesting to like when you started that story, it was very interesting because it was, I don't know, I was like, look, think about it's like you have to consider all these things that you didn't, you know, you kind of take for granted, like a porch. Everybody knows what a porch is, but you have to consider all these things. But I thought it was really funny when he was like, and then we brought the actors in and they just spent like an hour just being And it was almost like a improv initiation scene on scene work. It was like, not real.
Yeah, what's real?
Interesting. What's not real? Interesting choice by our director and production. Ooh, that's heavy.
Mm-hmm. The opening to Back Something to the to Future consider. Is a really good lesson in visual storytelling, though. I know we're on to touch, but to me, that example felt more visual.
Yeah.
And so it's in the wrong chapter, Simone.
Simone.
Yeah, but it reminded me that often when you think of storytelling, you're like, who's the first character we see? What's the first thing they say? But what Back to the Future does is it gives you so much exposition in 3 minutes without saying anything, without really you don't even see the main characters yet. And I don't think about that enough. Like, when I approach directing, whether it's a script I wrote or someone else's script, thinking, let's say there's budget restraints. Instead of, like, shooting this crazy scene where your actors are saying all these things and doing all these scenes, what if you were to rewrite it, get the same exposition across in the same way that the Back to the Future opening does? And then, I don't know. It's almost like a solution in a way.
I think I felt similarly that it, like, that these things are visual as much as, like, from the touch perspective, like his lessons here. Yeah. Like, I agree. To me, the Back to the Future is really efficient visual storytelling that doesn't rely on dialogue. You know what I mean? Like, like dialogue and interaction. It doesn't rely, it relies basically on just like moving this camera through a space that tells you all of the exposition you need to know to start this story in like a minute. So like, it is like, it feels more visual to me too. Mm-hmm. In terms of like this as a book too, here's a good example, and I'll hold this up for our Facebook audience. But so here's an example of like, this is a 120 page book and here's 4 pages of it.
It's a quick read.
There's a lot of pictures. That's why you chose
it. Yeah, illustrated, great illustrated classics.
This is also why it's like, I can't be overly like annoyed with this book either. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not mad at this book. It was fine.
Hey, man.
Because it was so easy to read. This is 4 pages of just pictures.
Yeah.
And you just follow along with it and like, it reads like a snap. It's such a fast read.
Yeah. It's a Subway book.
Yeah, I will say like, kind of similar to like the Groucho Marx quote of like, I don't want to be a member of any club that would have me as a member. Like, I don't want to read a directing book that I've seen all the movies it's referencing. I consider myself to have like pretty baseline taste. And like, if this is a person who's claiming to be like a great director and to teach you how to direct, I shouldn't have seen all of the films that like, it should be.
He talks about Star Wars like a lot.
He talks about the third Hunger Games movie.
Yeah.
Like
a lot.
And Harry Potter.
A lot. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was the darkest Hunger Games.
It was the best directed Hunger Games. That's what we all said about it.
Often what people say. Yeah.
That I expect to see Rear Window. I think it's a tried and true example that like, it's nothing crazy to say that Alfred Hitchcock is a good director.
not going
out on a limb, but like the examples throughout this, like for him to point to The Matrix and Back to the Future and all these things, I'm like, I get what you're doing here. Like, those are sort of modern classics to an extent, but also like, I don't know if this is me reacting to like, this was written for a younger reader than me, and I'm like, oh crap, I'm old, and all the things that people are like looking at as classics are now, like, they were new to me. But it's confusing to me to read a book that's like, this is how you become a good director, and then it points to the newest Hunger Games movie, and it's like, this is what a good movie looks like. And I'm like, I saw that. That wasn't a good movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, for
Catching
sure.
Catching fire.
In the hearing section is all about music. So, yeah, I was going to ask you, because I know, Tessa, that's a really important, like, piece of the filmmaking process to you is the sort of, like, sound piece. How'd this section strike you?
I think I like reading about sound design and music because I find it to be such a make or break element of filmmaking. If you have bad sound, no one's going to pay attention to your movie.
True.
But beyond that, I just directed a pilot and I'm working with the editor, and they're a little bit more of a green editor, and it's hard to look at rough cuts because there's no sound design in it yet. And I'm trying to be supportive and collaborative, but I'm saying my biggest note is, The cut is fine. I just can't watch it because there's no sound design and there's no music. Like, here are my suggestions. Spend some time with it. Watch these references. Let's sit down again once there's some sound design and some music, because that will break, especially with comedy, like, make or break the tone of it, the type of comedy. Is it like, are we playing it straight? Are we goofy like Wet Hot American Summer? Music is a pacing thing, too. Like, music alone, and he talks about this, tells
a
little story.
Everything you're saying right now is more insightful than what.
That is exactly what I was going to say. This is more insightful than what this book
says. This is a direct quote. In film, music is words that cannot be spoken. And it's
thank you.
Tessa, you're more right here than the book.
Yeah. I mean, he talks about, like, Fantasia, and look, Fantasia is actually one of my favorite films. Because as a kid... Yeah, when I watched it, I was like, I see what's going on. I hear what's going on.
But again, it's so boilerplate.
It's so boilerplate. The book is so boilerplate.
To bring up Fantasia in a section about using music to tell a story is like...
It's talking about Babe Ruth when you're trying to explain how to play baseball.
It's like talking about Buffalo Wild Wings and you're trying to talk about wings.
He's just like, music is important. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the chapter. Yeah. And you're like, yup.
It's a short chapter, but I'd have to say, of the three sentences done so far, at least
was his insightful chapter. Was his, I didn't read this exercise, but is the exercise listen to songs and imagine what the scene is?
I don't actually see an assignment.
I'm assigning you the sound assignment, which is listen to songs and then try to visualize what that scene is.
That's right.
It's a thing. That I just do. Again, and it's made me not a director, but it's fun.
Arguably more useful.
So
we've gone through three senses so far. Visual, sound, and touch, right? So that leaves taste, right? And smell, which are probably the two that were, as you really start to think about the conceit of this book, the most confusing, right? Mm-hmm. Taste and smell. Okay.
Right.
So smell is, he gets to smell first. Makes sense. Leave taste for last, because what are you going to do there?
He even says something. He's like, I'm not telling you to lick the film stock. And I'm like, oh God, I was about to.
It's like dad joke.
That was a hard, heavy dad joke.
All right, but for smell, he's essentially saying, and here's the header, how to smell a lie, bad performances. So he's talking about the smell sniffing out a bad performance from an actor.
That's, guess what? That's a reach.
I mean, I think that like for me, this is probably the section where this starts to really fall off. As I was saying, like, it felt like it started stronger than it ended. This is like just to deliver on this conceit of the senses and nothing else. Like, it's in terms of like applicable things to talk to a director about. This is not where this book should be going.
Yeah.
Because it's also not a fundamental thing. Like, if we're saying that this is a book for filmmakers who are just starting out, it's like,
well, you're going to be directing your first thing, a liar. You're a liar, actor.
He gives actual tips here on how to direct actors, which, you're right, is a little bit different than just talking about what the senses are. And I guess I appreciate him trying to apply the senses. Like, I underlined a couple things. Like, he was like, instead of being manipulative or patronizing to an actor and like try and trick them to get to do something, just tell them you need them to find motivation to move into this corner because that's where your light is or something. And I was like, okay, like that's sort of an applicable tip that you could actually use on set with an actor if you don't already know to do that and be sensitive to the actors. But I think to your point, Nate, as the book, this is going beyond. This is like teaching directing actors and not teaching the sense of how do you look for the right actor for the part? How do you smell out performers who are, you know, going to do a good
job?
Absolutely.
And also, like, unless you are waking up in the morning and going, I choose to be a film director today. And then you walk out of your house and someone's like, come direct this movie immediately, right?
Yeah.
This chapter feels like it does not belong in a book that is about that is so rudimentary to the concept of directing.
Right.
Like, the idea that you'd be in a situation with an actor who, number one, is a professional, and number two, that you don't know already on the first thing that, based on the beginning of this book, the first project you're ever working on is insane. Like, yeah. You're going to get there through experience. You're going to work with, you're going to act in your own stuff. You're going to work with your friends. You're going to, like, if you're that starting out, that's the approach most people have. And then you sort of learn, oh, how does it feel to navigate this? And you know what I mean? And yeah. Then you start to look for a book that might be like, or some sort of resource that's like working with actors in a more right. high level setting. I don't know. Is that insane? Yeah.
Can I admit something about reading this chapter?
Please.
Because this is a chapter where I agree with everything you guys have said. Of like, I started to fall off, and I like honestly started to fall asleep during this chapter. And then he started talking about the West Wing in this chapter, and I'm like, I'm the biggest West Wing fan, and I'm like, all right, I'll give you one more chapter. Like, all right, and I'm back in, and like, I don't necessarily agree or disagree with anything he said about the West Wing. Other than he was very complimentary of it, and I was like, maybe I can side with this guy.
All right.
He likes the West Wing. Yeah. So.
Also, I don't remember. Like, I think it's also like when you watch the West Wing too. It's like it's to me the idea that the first, like, okay, maybe the first time I watched the West Wing and I watched the pilot, and I was like, ooh, that's a cool shot. Mm-hmm. They do it so many times that by the end of it, you're like, I don't remember one specific walk and talk.
No,
in the
but
West Wing.
it is the best show like on paper because I've read the actual script of the West Wing pilot on yeah. paper. Sorkin has said the pilot of the West Wing came from the cut portions of The American President. Like, The American President as a first script was 300 pages long. He cut all of the stuff out, and that became the pilot of the West Wing.
Wow.
And it's like, the West Wing watching it is, if what we were just talking about, of like, it's visual storytelling of dialogue, right? Like, it's just people walking and people, like, for whatever reason that, like, we as viewers are willing to, or some people as viewers, some people hate walk and talks and whatnot, but like, it's like, oh, we as viewers are willing to couch dialogue in this very basic motion, and it makes it watchable rather than just Josh and Sam standing in a hallway and talking to each other. Right. You know, like, that's what makes it watchable is the fact that they're walking and talking, because all they do is talk, because all Sorkin writes, and he's my favorite writer, all Sorkin writes is dialogue. Like, he could give a shit about action. So maybe as like a director, that's why his best films are the ones that are paired with great directors, is yeah. because like otherwise it's all dialogue and a lesser director can't handle it, you know? That's why Social Network's so great. That's why A Few Good Men is so great, is because they're so dialogue heavy, but they still look so interesting.
We are we're on to Sense Number 6.
Yum, wait, yum.
Did we do Taste?
Oh, no, we didn't do Taste yet. Taste. Sorry, number five. We're not ready to reveal it. Taste, which is not, again...
He just talks about his favorite flavors of ice cream, and it's really weird.
And he tells you to watch five things.
No,
so
he doesn't. He doesn't actually talk about it.
He talks about lasagna, right?
Right.
No, he's Italian.
He says, if you want to develop taste, if you want to develop your taste as a director, here's a list of what to look for. Watch Friday Night Lights TV series episode 1, watch The West Wing episode 1, watch The King's Speech, watch The Matrix, and watch the movie Munich. And from that, if you can figure out what you like and what you don't like, that will determine your taste as a director.
Eh, go fuck yourself.
And that, to me, I was like, I've seen four of these five things, and I know what Munich's about. I like four of these five things, like, a lot. Like, yeah, West Wing and Friday Night Lights are, like, my two favorite TV shows, and they couldn't be more different. And for me, as a director, like, that in no way informs, like,
yeah.
He just listed five good things.
Well, then he does his great, then he does his cool professor joke. Let me tell you a secret. Both are wrong. Just kidding. Both are right.
Yeah, he flip-flops a lot. But also what's silly about this is he's telling you how to find your taste. But that would be like saying, if you want to be a doctor, go figure out why you want to be a doctor. Like, it's assuming you don't want to be a filmmaker and you don't already have cinematic mm-hmm. tastes and whatever, which is why it really makes it feel like even like a media studies book from high school or something. Or like, have you considered filmmaking? Like, what kind of movies do you like? Oh, it turns out you like movies. That's sort of the suggestion he makes in this chapter of like figuring out your taste. I really fucking hope that anyone who's interested in filmmaking figured out a long time ago that there were specific types of things they liked. Yeah. I mean, I guess it helps to like narrow down, but
it also feels like it's like we've accelerated. Again, we've accelerated from the beginning of this where we're just sort of like talking very fundamentally about what a director, you know, is doing and does, and you know, so like some things that feel really basic. We're again in a place where we're like, this is so you can't nail this down, and you're going to have to sort of like make some stuff and start to figure this out. it feels like we're speaking, this book in this section is speaking to a different audience than the beginning.
It's also, I think, incredibly short-sighted to imply that the way that your taste is developed is only through watching other movies. Like,
yeah,
you have to trial and error, and so.
And like, your taste is like very much all of your life experiences
come
and they develop. Like the way that you feel about like, because it's not just like, oh, I like movies that are big and wacky, but I like my books to be like quiet and boring. Like,
sure.
So, you know, like that's generally like my taste of books is the same as my taste for music, and it's like
you're
all are. It's all like, that's your whole person. That's your all of your life experiences create your taste. Not just, you can't just watch five
other
things
movies
and be like, I'm a guy who likes handheld shooting. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
And,
that's a really good point.
And I think that this, it starts to really fall apart from here. Let's let's get to this sixth sense.
Mm-hmm.
So drum roll, the reveal is, yeah, Sophie's going to drum roll over there. The reveal is that your sixth sense out there, y'all, is vision. Not sight, which we covered already. That is one sense. But vision, which again is very similar to sight in terms of like how, you know, in some sort of like sense of like it being a synonym, right? But this is not that. This is vision as in like you having a director's vision to see what the project is before it even starts.
I had a little bit of appreciation for this chapter, not because it was new, but because it was a good reminder, which basically the thesis of the chapter is like, you need to ask why you're doing anything to begin with. Why are you telling a story? Why are you casting these people? Why is this line of dialogue in there?
Yeah.
And that is really easy to lose sight of when you're in the throes of production and when you're writing and you're revising and you're on your like 20th version of the script or something, is to constantly ask why. And even though at this point of the book, yeah, I was just like, all right, I need to go make lunch.
wow, you did this all...
In one day, yeah.
No, actually, I did.
The first part of the morning, and then
it
was lunchtime, and then you finished the book. Yeah,
but yeah, I did appreciate this reminder of to always, and I do that when I collaborate with other writers and other filmmakers and actors. Is like, why are we doing, or clients? Oh my god, like work for hire. The biggest question that always comes up is like, what's important to you as like the brand or whatever?
Definitely.
And why is this being made? Why are you hiring us? And what do you expect out of it? Like, that is easy to lose sight of, especially in work for hire. And I don't know. It was kind of a good reminder.
But that's again why I come back. And look, and maybe this conversation starts to become about what your expectations are of the book at this point. Because again, I was hoping for this kind of, like for that kind of discussion that's more like valuable advice for people who are working as directors. But like, if you're starting out the way this book presents itself at the beginning, you don't need to ask why. Make stuff. Get your hands dirty.
Right.
You can ask why when you get to a place where you are in a seat where you're making some sort of like, where you're sacrificing something to take on a project.
Yep.
If it's just about getting experience and it's about like doing something with your peers or doing something that like, you don't need to always have an answer to why that, what this thing's going to lead you to.
Right.
You should do it. Say yes to it. Right.
Yeah.
Say yes to the dress.
Say yes to that dress.
Say yes to the dress. It is insane to be like, the six senses of directing are like sight, sound, smell, taste, touch, and sight.
Well, it was like they were high. There was definitely a high, you know, you get a high thought and then like it really breaks down once you sober up. He's like stoned and was like, directing six senses. And it made sense in his head, and he probably made vision and taste and smell make sense. And then once he sobered up, he's like, oh, these first senses just write themselves. And then he got to the third, halfway through the book, and was like, oh no.
The vision.
What?
It does seem like as he's writing the book, he's like loosening up and like letting himself have more fun writing the book. Like one
he's
of the
like
chapters starts,
three drinks in.
I think it's like smell starts with him being like, not gonna lie, I love this chapter.
And this is a good
one.
And
he's
like, this
he's
is a good
his
one.
Third
like,
drink, and he's like, yeah. Now that we're into it.
Now that we've gotten to know each other a little bit.
By the end, he's just jabbering on nonsense.
My top button.
He's like talking about focal length and shit.
Like at one point, I kind of expected in this chapter for him to be like, did I already say sight? Nah, it's fine.
Let's talk about grapes.
Yeah.
Yeah, who's keeping track of these things?
You don't remember.
Yeah.
We get some nice Hunger Games references in our next chapter, which is the longest chapter. Do or do not, there is no try. Yoda? How to put everything together.
The best, almost the best director.
So much Yoda and Star Wars reference. He ends the book with a Star Wars line. Quote? May the Force be with you.
Again, this one, and now, like right off the bat here, we go back to something very fundamental. Wow. We have a diagram of focal length, field of view, right? Like we're going back to a place where it's like, visual. If you're getting from vision what you pulled out of the vision section, Tessa, you probably already have this information.
Yeah.
If you have this information already, then what the fuck are you going to do with a section about like how to have creative vision on a feature?
Yeah.
There, it feels like it's like for two different audiences.
Yeah, in the section about vision, he goes back to camera and visual stuff.
Yeah.
Two very different things.
Yeah, this is the seventh sense seeing.
Yeah.
is eye stuff.
No, it's looking.
Yeah, looking, yeah.
That's
see, Tessa, you've underlined the section with the three P's in your book here.
Oh, I thought this was funny. He was like, the three P's to success are preparation, preparation, preparation. That should be the case for any professional in any job.
Sorry, what was everybody's opinion of the director's journal? Of having a director's journal and a diary? And it's a very... He goes into like... a very specific worksheet chart, how many things you fill out, what you're considering kind of a thing.
For a feature, maybe.
I feel like it's impractical.
That goes back to 101. Like, it's like a very 101 class type thing.
Yeah. I think that some of this stuff, here's a defense of the book in what I'm trying to find some logic in this whole thing, right? Maybe what he's really trying to get out of you is some of that, he's trying to teach you how to get out these advanced concepts, right? To need to keep a journal like that is to not know yourself in some ways. And maybe it's a useful tool for some people. Personally, to me, like, I wouldn't have the discipline to do it personally. And I would rather like know myself and sort of like ask myself some of these questions, internalize some of these questions to like get out those answers in the work. Because to me, it's more about just like on any project, it's like I don't have time to keep a journal. It's time to go. It's time to make
journal,
this thing.
Yeah, I agree. Because the journaling is also about writing down all of your prep work. But I think in the reality of it, all of that prep work happens in meetings and conversations with the writers, with the DP, with the actors.
I do think there's a difference maybe like just from us as we make sketches and shorter things. Has anybody here read Robert Rodriguez's Rebel Without a Crew?
No.
It's like his journal from making Desperado. And it's fascinating. It's very, very interesting. It's a great read. Everybody, honestly.
It's just straight up his diary.
It's his diary. And also it contains at the end like his like 10-minute film or like his 10-minute film school, I think is what it's called. Mm. It's a great, great book. And that was interesting just to see like him go through the process of like detailing the process of making this thing. But it almost seemed like that to me. Almost seems like, hey, after you're done with this movie, do you want to sell a book? That would be fine. Like, I don't know. I can see the practical nature of it, but it does seem unrealistic to me. Other than like, remember tomorrow morning, like bring extension cord.
Sure.
Kind of a thing.
So as we get close to the end here, he does a nice case study of a specific scene in Dead Poets Society. To which,
carpe diem.
To me, that scene isn't the most memorable scene in Dead Poets Society that he breaks down.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Also, personally, and this is also just taste wise for me, Dead Poets Society is not that important a movie to me. Personally, I enjoyed it, I need to watch that again and again. I watched it once. I'm like, cool. I saw that.
This is what tells me that like he's writing this for college freshmen. As a college freshman, Dead Poets Society was so important.
Yeah,
to me.
I see that. Right,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, I get that.
Ugh, what an important movie.
Yeah.
And he talks a little bit about that, about how you know certain movies at different times in your life mean more than other times in your life or less.
And I guess this case study feels again out of place in this book. It feels like this should be in a thicker book.
Mm-hmm.
That if we were gonna go this route, this is a real college textbook that's gonna take a detour like this to really make a point and move on. This is the last chapter. The case study is the end of the book.
And just thematically, you're a director. You named the book The Director's Six Senses. You can choose any movie to do a case study of. Do The Sixth Sense. Like, All you're pointing out here is that scenes have an act one, an act two, and an act three. And there's great scenes in that movie, too.
Yeah, that have that structure.
Yeah, I was surprised that, there was no mention.
Call or that or change the title of the book to The Director's Dead Poet Society.
The Director's Why Society. I love yeah. The Director's Dead Poet Society.
The directors are dead.
Can I add this, too? And I think this is something that Sean had brought up, too. And he's saying that, like, here's what he wrote. As a teacher, I support anyone and everyone trying to teach someone else. And yet I found myself very dubious of Simone's experience and whether he, I originally thought Simone was a woman and was excited to read a directing fundamentals book from a female POV, whether he had the background to be a resource for filmmaking fundamentals. You know, like, there is also that aspect of this that's like,
never even Googled him.
And that's not to denigrate his experience. He does have a background in filmmaking. What I mean to say is, like, I think Sean's point taken. He's not a luminary, you know, he's not somebody who's like high up in this industry in that way to like, but like, where's the reference to your own work too?
Yeah.
There's also something about this, like, I would be way more forgiving of some of the top level analysis that he does if what he was opening himself up to is like, I did this project, here's how I did it, mm-hmm. Here's the lessons I learned from it, then it feels like I'm getting to know him, mm-hmm. Yes, in like a way that's like, yes, Dead Poets Society, good movie, sure, that doesn't help me that much.
But right. He directed Of Puppies and Men.
Of Puppies and Men?
Apparently.
I need to watch that.
I've never heard of any of these movies.
We're coming to the end here of our book club. It's been a very nice session. I finished my Bronx beer. Somebody opened a second beer?
I did not.
Sammy's going at it. Sammy's going at that beer.
I can't wait to pee.
Now you're trying a different kind?
Which of your six senses are you using?
Which vision?
Helton style. I had a vision of, you know, a really fun night. Mm-hmm. If I drank one more beer.
So as we get to the conclusion here, you know, with our last book, we gave it a rating out of 10 in terms of like how we felt like the book settled overall. You know, I think for me, I'm going to have to say this was a 4 out of 10 for me, just for some of the reasons we talked about. And I think that like, that's also partially me. I think maybe 10 years ago, I would have given it more of like a 6.5. You know, I think a younger, if I was more open to some of these lessons, I would have been in a different place. But like right now, for me, reading this book, a 4, and you don't need this conceit. Just give me this, you know, give me straight dope, Simone.
Yep.
I don't need this conceit to like get me in.
I agree.
What do you guys think? What's your number?
Similar. Yeah, I'd say 4 because there's valuable reminders. And I agree that as a starting out filmmaker, it would be more valuable. So if you're just starting out, but yeah, I'm on the same page.
I'm going to give it a 5 based on the fact that as someone who is not an experienced director, there were things in here that seemed obvious to you guys that I kind of was like, oh, I never really thought about it that way. So I wouldn't I'm sure there's better literature out there to be a director, but there was stuff in here that was fine and made me think a little bit more than you guys probably had to.
I'm going to give it a 6, one for each of my senses. and I'm going to do that mostly because I was able to finish the book. And that to me is like, you wrote an okay book.
Okay.
Like, it was readable. Like, at a baseline readable, you get, like, 6 out of 10 is still an F. But, like, you know what I mean? Like,
lower than average.
It's still lower than average, but, like, I was able to read it. Nothing you said in there struck me as being, like, no, don't do that.
Yeah, don't learn this.
No, it's not.
But also, like, this strikes me as something, if you've never seen a movie before and you've never directed anything, then, yeah, this would be an okay intro, you know?
Sure. So, overall, we're, like, averaging out.
I don't think it'll kill you to read. It's such a quick read that it's, like, if you spend a week going through this and you're, like, all right, this kind of piqued my interest into directing, then, you know. You know, at the end of the day, Simone, you kind of did your job.
Simone!
For speed of a read, I'll give it a 10.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, if Simone's goal was to...
Fast read, 10.
If Simone, a lot of pictures.
Yeah, a lot of pictures.
If Simone's goal was to create the next great director, mission not accomplished. If it was, like, maybe get some people, like, you know, crash course in, maybe I want to direct, then, you know,
yeah,
be mission accomplished.
Well, thanks, you guys, for doing this. To everyone on the panel here, Tessa, Sam, and Matt. Thanks, everybody out there, for listening and for tuning in on Facebook. This, again, is the UCB Digital Podcast. We are every single Tuesday at itunes.com/UCB Comedy. You can follow us on Twitter and Facebook at UCB Digital. We'll be back with another brand new episode next week. And until then, y'all, we'll see you on the internet. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Jesse.
Ciao, ciao. Fins
on. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Jesse.
This has been a UCB Comedy production. Check out our other shows on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network.